The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Today FM.
It all happens here.
It's time for our weekly spot with John Gibbons, the last word on the environment. John, isn't it great to see the sunny weather, feeling the heat on the bones? Puts everyone in a good mood, doesn't it? This, hopefully, heat wave we're going to get for at least the weekend, maybe a bit longer.
Yeah, good afternoon, Matt. Yeah, certainly in this part of the world at the moment, a little good weather is always welcome, that's for sure. I think our neighbours across in Belgium and Germany are probably feeling a little bit different about it at the moment. I see 33 people drowned in severe flooding in Germany over the last 24 hours and similar reports coming in from Belgium. So unfortunately, everywhere you get extreme weather, we're also getting these type of consequences from it, Matt. But look, I don't want to...
What we're getting in Ireland, though, could hardly be described as extreme weather, could it? I mean, for as long as I can remember, there's always been parts of most summers where you would have got weather like this. Temperatures in the mid-20s for Ireland are not extreme, are they?
No, not at all. No, absolutely not. And I think we all welcome a bit of a break from what has been, for example, we had a very cold spring, we had an unusually cold May. So, of course, everybody's out the back garden, everybody's enjoying it, and hopefully it'll last for a few days. I suppose, really, the alarm bells are ringing a little further afield when we've seen, as you pointed out yourself on a show recently, where areas in the Pacific Northwest on a similar latitude to Ireland were receiving temperatures in the high 40s. Now, I will point out, Matt, that we've never exceeded, I think it's 33.6 degrees on this island. So if and when we break that one, well, then we can talk about extreme weather in Ireland. But you're right. For now, our maritime position, we seem to be buffered against the worst of it. And long may that continue.
Yeah, just remind us, what is the protection we enjoy here in Ireland at present?
Well, first of all, principally, obviously, it's our latitude, number one. We're quite northerly. I mean, we're far more northerly than people think. If you draw a line straight across from Ireland, you're at Newfoundland, which is in northern Canada. So we're quite far north. That's the first thing. So obviously, that's a protection. And the second thing, of course, is we're surrounded by the ocean. So we have the advantage of a maritime climate. And we also have the added benefit that we get a huge transfer of heat energy from the Caribbean via the Gulf Stream that passes by the west coast of Ireland and increases our mean temperatures here by, I think it's between 2 and 3 degrees centigrade. So if without the Gulf Stream, for example, we would have a climate in Ireland more akin to Newfoundland. So we're in that sort of Goldilocks climate at the moment. Not too hot, not too cold. And as I say, long may it continue.
Absolutely. Now, something else I want to ask you about, and it's becoming a bit of a trend, something called wild gardening, which for some people I think is just an excuse to not go out and cut the grass or to do the weeding. But tell us a little bit about the biodiversity benefits of so-called wild gardening and the work that is still involved rather than just leaving things grow out.
Sure. Well, first of all, I would qualify as a wild gardener in the sense that I'm a lazy gardener. And they do say that tidiness is the enemy of biodiversity. And we do see that, just this effort to constantly tidy things up, to constantly improve, to constantly trim, mow, scrape and clear. The problem is nature doesn't work in straight lines. Natural systems need nooks and crannies. And our gardens, the way we've currently engineered them, often with exotic species. Exotic species, Matt, may look fantastic, they may smell great, but they're not much use to the insects and the creatures that are accustomed to being able to harvest their food from native species. So the wild garden concept really is about offering little refuges of biodiversity and of safety, that wildlife, if you like. It gives them a toehold. And it is important to say that you don't have to have a huge garden to do this. This can be done anywhere. In fact, you can grow wildflowers in a window box. So it's not a case of saying, well, he's only talking to people with gardens.
Is that not an oxymoron? Wildflowers in a window box.
Yeah, it sounds like it, absolutely. But in fact, it's possible. And the point about it is that nature is messy and scrappy. And we have tried to tidy it up. And take the classic Irish, or in fact, to give it its proper term, the English lawn. I mean, this is really an import from the Victorian era, where it was all about covering the legs on pianos and having everything neat and smooth and orderly. And really, the modern Irish lawn is a hangover from that Victorian obsession with cleanliness and tidiness. But the Irish lawn or the Victorian lawn is of no use to biodiversity. So a few little things we could think about, Matt, just to get rolling on this. The first is the best thing you can do with your lawn is to stop cutting it. Just let it go. I mean, particularly they say, I know it's a little bit late now, but say come around next year, give it a cut towards the end of May, but don't cut it again until the end of July. So the less you cut your lawn, the better. Also, if you're cutting your lawn, don't cut from the outside in, cut from the inside out. Now, the reason for that is if you've got critters in the grass and you cut from the outside in, they've got nowhere. You may trap them and you may end up running over them. If you cut from the inside out, you give them a chance to escape and to move away. So that's number one. Second thing is we tend to use some of the dirtiest engines in left in the country. These are two-stroke engines, for example, in lawnmowers and my personal curse, which is the thing called a petrol-powered leaf blower, probably the craziest invention in history, something that a rake does the job every bit as well. These things are noisy and they're smelly. And if obviously we still need a certain amount of maintenance, you can replace these. And I've done this myself with the electric version, either a plug-in or battery power. So you do your little bit of trimming, your little bit of strimming without the smoke, without the emissions and without the noise, because the huge noise pollution arising from these. So there are a couple of small things. Very importantly, stop using chemicals. Do not use pesticides. Do not use herbicides. If you go up to your garden center, in fact, there's one of the big name Dublin garden centers has this massive display of Roundup, otherwise known as glyphosate, and they're pushing it as a big sale item. Don't buy it. That stuff is destroying biodiversity. It's destroying nature. It has no role in your garden. You can manage a typical garden without poisoning it. So that's the first thing.
But sorry, you actually have to manage it. It's not just a question of leaving it grow out as nature intended, letting the grass go to knee high and the rest of it. Because if you do that, the weeds will take hold, won't they? And they will do damage. Or is that the case?
Well, yes and no. I mean, first of all, if you already have a well-established lawn, it isn't a question of just abandoning it, because you're right. What happens then is you get dock leaves, you get nettles and so on coming through it. So in that case, you may need to actually remove the top couple of inches and basically replace it with a wildflower lawn. That means essentially scraping it off and sprinkling wildflower seeds. Give them a chance to actually get started. The problem is grass is a very competitive cereal. It's really competitive and it tends to outcompete everything except for very knotty, tough weeds like docks. So you're right, you can't just abandon it and you can't just walk away. A couple of other things, Matt, I would say is we may well be heading into a heat wave, as you said at the top of the program. If we do, don't water your lawn.
I was just about to ask you that because this causes mayhem every year when we get Irish Water saying we're running low on supplies, don't water the grass or the garden, and everyone's up in arms. How are they going to look after their lovely lawn?
Absolutely. The thing about grass is, as I said, it's a tough, resilient plant. You can let grass turn to brown. I know it looks a fright, but guess what? As soon as it rains, your grass will come back again. So I think it's more a case, and it's so often the case, we need to learn to just keep our hands off things and let them run their course. Another thing, Matt, I did mention about chemicals in particular, but another thing, please stop using peat. We're still, unfortunately, it's still being sold again in our garden centres. Every time you use a bag of peat, you're helping to destroy peatland. So if you claim to be a gardener and you claim to care about nature, you cannot use peat. Britain, for example, is now moving to a complete ban on peat. But unfortunately, in Ireland, we're nowhere near that. In fact, the horticultural industry had a protest the other day demanding the right to continue to use peat for horticultural purposes. Now, they've known that peat cutting and board pneumonia, as you know, this week as further exiting the peat business, they've known for years that they need to find alternatives to peat. But rather than do that, peat is a very effective as a horticultural base, but it's incredibly destructive. So if you as a gardener, if you're using peat and you've got a bag of peat out in the shed, use it and never buy the stuff again. There are peat-free alternatives. And if you go, and I've done this, I've gone to my local Woodies and I've asked them about this, and they said, oh, we don't stock peat-free. Well, ask them. And if enough people ask them, I guarantee you the next time you're back, they will stock peat-free. These are the kind of things that we need to move on for. Also, Matt, if you have
I can anticipate the complaints about that. So I'll just say the number for those who want to complain is 0874 100 102. Carry on, please, John Gibbons.
Sure. Just a quick one. If you have a cat, cats are wonderful, but cats are basically, in Ireland, are an invasive species. They're not a native species at all. And they're an absolute menace, especially to young birds. Birds can't deal with cats, especially novice birds. So if you've got a cat, keep your cat out of the garden. Keep it under control. Do not let it out for long nighttime runs, because essentially you're letting out a scaled down tiger loose in your garden. And as I say, our birds and our chicks haven't evolved alongside baby tigers. So that's another small but important step to say. They're voracious predators often, and they don't even kill for food. They kill for fun. So keep your cats out. But the main thing to go back to it, Matt, is the garden, right? Practical things you can do. For example, willow trees. They provide pollen for bees. Leave your wood, like take a pile of wood, just a regular pile of wood, and stack it up in your garden and leave it there, because that provides nooks and crannies for various insects, various arthropods to make their home. Also, probably the single best thing, even if you only have a small space, create a little pond. That gives, first of all, water to creatures to access it. But secondly, even small ponds are absolute havens of biodiversity. Probably, you know, inch for inch, there's nothing more helpful to biodiversity than a small pond. And also, of course, many creatures will be tracking through your garden at night. So don't close it off. Don't seal it off. Make pathways for them. Allow them the little nooks and crannies. Just living alongside nature and learning to respect it, and maybe even having a secret look. These are the things that will allow us, hopefully, to create that small window.
One last thing I want to ask you about. Move away from ponds for me and talk to me about marine protected areas, which is something that the government has given priority to at present.
That's right, Matt. At the moment, first of all, Ireland has 10 times more marine area than land area. So we, as an island nation, we have a large marine area that is part of our national territory. Of that, 2.1% is designated as, quote, protected, a so-called marine protected area. Now, I was chatting to the people in the Irish Wildlife Trust to ask them, what exactly do they mean by protected? And essentially, inside our so-called marine protected areas, you can have bottom trawling, you can have pair trawling, you can have fishing. So essentially, what they call it, the syndrome is called paper protection. In other words, it's written somewhere on a map. So essentially, we have more or less zero protection. Now, the Irish government, Simon Coveney, when he was the minister 4 years ago, committed that this would be 10% by 2020. So we've missed that by a mile. Now, to come into compliance, Matt, with EU biodiversity regulations, our marine protected areas are supposed to rise to 30% by 2030. This is from an unprotected 2.1% today. And I suppose for me, the great thing about marine protected areas is they're the ultimate, it makes so much sense. Because we know, for example, that marine catches are declining. We know that there's more fish, there's more fishermen and more boats hunting fish now than there's ever been. And yet the catches are declining. So, for example, between 1950 and 2015, the global fishing fleet more than doubled. It's now nearly 4 million vessels. And essentially, we're fishing right down the food chain. We're getting a typical fisherman today has to try five times harder to catch the same number of fish as we were catching back then. And this has also been sponsored, the WWF, the World Wildlife Federation. They pointed out that the EU's common fisheries policy, which we pump about 6 billion a year into, this is financing overfishing. It means essentially we're paying uncompetitive fishermen to go to sea. And I suppose, as we've seen, for example, with the just transition for the likes of the Bord na Mona workers, I'd love to see a move where we begin to just transition our fishermen to be custodians of our marine territory rather than simply drawing things from it. I think it's important to stress, Matt.
We're out of time, John. Unfortunately, you can't stress anything else. And I have to give the number out again for a chance to read comments afterwards in response to all you said. 0874100102. I'm sorry, John Givens, we had gone over the time we had available to us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Weekdays from 4:30. Today.